We're going to go ahead and cut in right now. We do have Senator Lisa Murkowski on the line right now, as promised. She's got a busy day ahead of her, but she's on the phone right now. So we're going to go ahead and cut into the music. And, Senator, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's good to be with you, Austin. I know it's been kind of an interesting beginning of the week for you all. You have the earthquake, the tsunami warning, and then we passed we got the agreement signed for King Cove. So a lot going on out there.
Yeah, it's been exciting, that's for sure. Unfortunately, the week started out on a big note with King Cove, and then the tsunami brought an added mix of excitement. But everyone's here and safe, and we're just excited to hear more about it. And just before we get started, let me say thank you and congratulations about the King Cove Road. When I posted on Facebook that the interview was happening today, and one of the people from the clinic wanted me to pass along from King Cove their really heartfelt thanks for all the work you put in to make that happen. They were very excited.
Well, you know, Austin, that is really what has made this three decades long fight so important. It's the people of King Cove. It is the people who have been impacted in one way, shape, or form or another. Those that have been asking for what virtually every other American takes for granted, and that's a reliable way to protect their health and safety, improve their quality of life, just through a simple connector road. And so it's heartwarming to hear that those who are at the clinic are very thankful and appreciative, because they see firsthand the stress and the trauma, and then the added distress that comes when you're not sure you're going to be able to get someone out safely.
Yeah.
Because of the weather. So know that we've been working on this for decades because of the people there, the people there in King Cove that we don't ever forget. We just don't ever forget. You may feel like you're a long ways away, not only from the major hospitals and medical care, but you're a long way from Washington, D.C., but don't ever think that we don't forget the good people that make up King Cove Cold Bay.
I appreciate that. And having a bad experience myself flying out of King Cove, I know that this road is going to make a big difference. As we go ahead, I have two big questions I wanted to ask you, because this is obviously the biggest push we've seen so far, with the federal government agreeing with the land deal now underneath President Trump and Secretary Zinke, which is fantastic. But this isn't the end of the line. It's a huge hurdle, but there are a couple other pieces. Mainly, there's going to be, of course, litigation that comes from conservationists, which is understandable from their perspective, but they are going to bring this to court. And then the second part that I wanted to ask you about, and I'll lead in with this question because it bounces into the idea about the litigation. You know, the thing that I've seen pushed time and time again from conservation groups is that this is going to be used for commercial purposes. Now, every time a soundbite comes out from you or another legislature, it's a non-commercial road. So my question is, did the language for the land agreement come in as a non-commercial road? And so that's the first question. And then secondly, what do you see as the pathway going ahead as litigation becomes the reality, the next step of reality?
Yeah. Well, insofar as the language and the uses of the road, it does indicate that the road is primarily, and it says primarily, non-commercial use road. And so there is a specific exclusion for commercial seafood processing being transported. So in other words, Peter Pan is not going to be able to put their product in container vans and ship them across the road. That's not what this road was intended for. Peter Pan has made it clear that that's not what they intended for. And so the language does make that clear. But I think we also need to recognize, but that does not mean that, say, for instance, a worker at Peter Pan is going to be prohibited from accessing that road. No, that individual is just like any other individual in King Cole. They will be able to access that road. But we keep in mind, this was language that was negotiated between the Department of the Interior and King Cole. So they did work to try to address the concerns that had been raised about it being used for extensive commercial activity. I think it is recognized, and the language is incorporated accordingly, that it is primarily a non-commercial use road. In terms of litigation, I think we recognize that given the opposition that we have seen over the years from those who have fought to keep the road out, that they will use litigation efforts to do what they can to derail this. I think it is important to know that the Secretary was and is very committed to seeing this road to completion. The very first conversation I ever had with Secretary Zinke, we discussed this in length. The very first conversation I had one-on-one with President Trump, we discussed this at length. And, in fact, I spoke with the president the day of the signing ceremony on Monday, and he was the one that was saying, you know, we need to make sure that we move on this road soon. People have been waiting for decades. He knows well the story of King Cove and your fight, and is committed to being there to assist. But I think we also do anticipate that there will be litigation, and I think that's one of the reasons why the Department of Interior took as long as they did to work the language of the agreement. Again, so that it would stand up to legal challenge. Their legal teams are very focused on delivering what the people of King Cove have waited for this long, and that is this connector road. So I will share what Della Trumbull shared with us on Monday when she spoke at the gathering there. She said, you know, we've waited, people of King Cove have waited over 30 years for this road. We can wait a couple more years as it takes to get the appraisals done and get the final conveyances done and work through those that would try to stop it. But we are on our way with an administration that is willing to work with us rather than work against us.
That sounds like it's set up for a good future going ahead with the language. And you know, it's kind of interesting hearing you talk about President Trump talking about the King Cove Road. It makes it feel pretty amazing and pretty exciting. So that's great news there. We look forward to hearing about that in the next couple of years. And then, you know, the other big landmark for you over the last several weeks has, of course, been the tax reform bill that was passed through. And the inclusion of the language to opening the Area 1002 in Anwar, which has been long sought after, and I think similar to the King Cove Road, was almost considered a no possibility or a complete long shot, but it made it through the federal hurdles and now is open for the impact study. Now, you know, that's obviously something that Alaskans have been pushing for again for decades. However, the circumstances in industry have changed at this time. And while the opening is great for the potential of exploration, oil in Alaska is a little bit harder to explore than oil in North Dakota at this time. So what do you see is a future for, you know, the ANWR, the 1002 section? Have you heard anything in the industry that makes you believe that this is something, because no matter what, if it was acted on today, it's going to be years down the line that we start seeing that oil. But do you think that people are interested in accessing that oil and exploring right now as the federal leases come online?
Well, and I think we need to keep in mind that with the language that was included as part of the tax reform, it required two lease sales, the first lease sale to be held within the first 4 years here. So it puts a timeline on things, and that is important because that will allow for a process moving forward where those that are interested can make a determination as to whether or not this is something that they want to join in on. I happen to believe that we will see a good level of interest in exploration in the 1002 area. There have been some naysayers that have said, no, you know, the industry hasn't indicated any interest. Well, let's put it in context. For all of these years, for close to 40 years, there's no way that anyone could even suggest being interested in it because it was closed off. It was not, you couldn't even look. And so if you can't look, of course you're going to say, well, you know, would be nice to be involved with it, but there's no opportunity for it, so we're going to look elsewhere. So now we have an opportunity. Now we have the opportunity. And so I think because of what we've seen of late with the sales within the NPRA, certainly on state land, great interest there, not so much on the federal lands. But I do think that you will have a level of interest from those that recognize that the geology in the 1002 is worthy of exploration. So it's still years off in terms of the leasing, but what we have now is something that we have not ever had before, or at least in 40 years. We haven't ever had the opportunity to even explore, to even do updated seismic, to understand better the geology and what the promise might hold. So we have a literally a frontier area that has been now made available going forward, not unlike King Cove. We know that the path isn't entirely clear, that there are those who will be opposed to any level of activity, and we will navigate through that. But again, for the first time in 40 years, we will have an opportunity to better understand what that area may hold for Alaskans, for the country, and really the world, because we believe that the resource will be there and be considerable for us. So it's really quite exciting to think that that up on the North Slope in an area that is just literally 3 miles from where Point Thompson is, we will have an opportunity to explore and hopefully produce and fill up that Trans-Alaska pipeline, fill up that pipeline that has helped our state for so many years.
I think that what you said there about the pipeline, too, is something that I believe will be a main motivating factor, because as the pipeline, you know, begins to wind down in the throughput, it's going to be in the best interest of all the organizations to make sure more oil is going in there so it stays online and is not dissembled. So I'm sure that will be a strong motivating factor for the industry to get in there. And I think you're right that down the line this will be something that the oil companies will go for. I know you have to get going, Senator. If I could ask two more quick questions that you can just pound off really quickly.
Sure.
You know, these are things that I'm curious about personally. One is along the resource extraction, LNG, of course, a big potential. Governor Walker working very hard to secure partnerships there, and potentially a big boom for the Alaska economy. I'm curious about federal partnership there, if you have any ideas or any thoughts about that. And then secondly, as Attorney General Jeff Sessions has pulled back the coal memorandum about the state marijuana sales and how that's going to affect Alaska, and just kind of hear your thoughts on those two subjects, very diverse, but things that affect our communities greatly, one for the economy of LNG and the potential there, and then our communities voted overwhelmingly to support legalized marijuana, so the change in the federal agreement there obviously affects our voters and our constituents greatly.
Yeah. Well, first, quickly, on Alaska and LNG, again, along with our oil resources, our natural gas resources are prolific. Our challenge has always been how we get that resource to the market. I agree with you. I think the governor has probably been able to go further than most in terms of this latest agreement or this memorandum of understanding with China. Well, that may not be perhaps unprecedented, is the fact that you had both the President of China and the President of the United States in that same room as that agreement was being inked. That puts a little extra weight on where we are and on how these conversations are proceeding. I think we recognize that given the abundance of natural gas out on the world market right now, Alaska has got to be a competitor from a cost perspective. So we're going to have to work very, very hard to get our costs down. We're going to have to ensure that we've got that solid market there. But again, when we think about opportunities for our state from a revenue perspective and a jobs perspective, it's not just about oil, it's about gas as well, and that's certainly something that we think about. From the federal side, what we are working on here, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is the agency that has the application right now. It is a massive filing and is requiring a great deal of work, and we're making sure that everything is moving along as it should. You know, obviously we can't be involved with that, but you need to make sure that they got the appropriate staffing and all the questions are being answered. So that is proceeding as we speak. As far as marijuana, it's interesting that you bring that issue up right now. I'm engaging with colleagues from other states that have legalized marijuana for recreational and medical use with Attorney General Sessions' decision several weeks ago, withdrawing the Cole Memorandum. It causes a great deal of uncertainty. It's very disruptive. We here in the state of Alaska have set up, I think, a pretty robust regulatory system to monitor and to permit and to regulate marijuana and marijuana sales. And now you have confusion about how that is going to intersect. Is what the state has done, will that be preempted by the federal government? We certainly hope not. But I am working with colleagues now to see how we might address this in certainly the short term, but more importantly, we need a longer term result. And it's not just what is coming out of the Department of Justice. I just came from a meeting with some of our representatives from credit unions. Our credit unions, our banks, they don't know how to handle the tax money that's coming in. You have a legitimate, lawful entity set up in the state to sell marijuana. They collect the money, the cash. They pay their taxes as they are required to do by law, and those taxes are then collected. The community needs to put those in some kind of a depository because it's safe, but the banks can't touch the money because of the federal-state conflict. It is a mess, to put it plain and simple. It was difficult before, but at least the Cole Memorandum deferred to the states and the states' regulatory process. With the Sessions Memorandum coming in, it really has upset so much of what people in good faith have relied on and building. I was not one that supported the initiative when it passed. but it passed. And as you say, it passed overwhelmingly in many communities, but it passed by strong measure throughout the state. So my job now is to make sure that the will of the people of Alaska is respected, that as a state, we are not preempted unlawfully by our federal government, that there is a smooth and a clear and a transparent process moving forward. So I'm working with a good group of folks on this, and I hope to have some news for people in the very short term here right now. But we're working it through. We did not expect this to come from the Attorney General. He pretty much he told me before his confirmation, as he committed to other members, that he was not going to interfere with what the states who had passed laws legalizing marijuana, that he was not going to interfere with that. And his memorandum, whether intentionally or unintentionally, clearly interferes with what the states have lawfully put in place. So we need to get this settled, and we need to provide the clarity. So it's a big job, but it's an important one.
That's mind-boggling to me, because knowing, without an interest in the initiative that passed, like you said, it did pass, and that's the thing that matters. But knowing Jeff Sessions' record, Attorney General Sessions' record, I'm stunned that he said that he wasn't going to involve himself in the state, because it seemed like that was something that was, to him, a hot-button issue that he was not going to be supportive of. So it's very interesting to see him, I guess, flip-flop, and I don't mean that to be too harsh, but, you know, say one thing and then have this action come out in the other. So it's very interesting that you say that.
Yeah. Well, it's again, when, even with the Cole memorandum, there was conflict between the laws. But when you acknowledge the state's rights to move forward with their own laws that require a level of strict regulatory control, and then you have the federal government step in and say, well, we're not going to respect that. We've got a real conflict. We have a real conflict going on. So, again, much to work on, and we're doing just that.
Well, hopefully it brings about a long-term solution, similar maybe to the removal of the DACA, and trying to get more of a long-term solution than just these memos and deference and things like that. So,
yeah.
Big job ahead of you, Senator Murkowski, but we appreciate you doing it, and I'll let you get back to your day. We just want to say thank you again so much for all your work for the King Cove Road and our communities, and being such a strong advocate, and appreciate you coming on the air as always, and hope to talk to you again soon.
Well, I hope to make it out there to share high fives and congratulations with all the fine people in your area. So thanks for the opportunity to be with you, Austin.
Thank you. Have a great day, and hopefully we'll see you then.